It is, yeah, it's with my great pleasure that I get to introduce to you my friend Sandra from Visalia. So, Sandra, take it away.
Thank you, Bill. Hi, Kathy. Hi, Mike. Good to see you this evening. I'm Sandra. I'm an alcoholic. Have we met before, Kathy? I don't think so. Nice to meet you. And you are celebrating, I can't see your sobriety date, but I think it's July of 2018.
3 years.
3 years. Congratulations.
Thank you.
That's really awesome. And I haven't seen Mike in forever. Mike, do you even have a camera? I know you can't have a voice, but can I see your face? No? Bill? I can't see him?
No, the computer he's using is great for recording, but it doesn't have any of the audio or video capabilities, unfortunately.
Oh, man. Okay, well, I'm going to imagine your face right now, Mike, and it's really good to see you, and I'm giving you a virtual hug. Anyways, thanks for asking me to speak, Bill. A few days ago, I texted Bill and told him I wasn't feeling like I was feeling very good, and I was wondering if I should do this or not, but I'm fine. I have an amazing program. I'm really proud of my program. I have a sponsor, I have a program, and I have a higher power, and so I know everything's going to be okay today, but my life is, like, really uncomfortable. I've been uncomfortable for a long time now, actually, but it's, like, in a really, like, delicious sort of a way. My last sponsor, the one that I had before I have the one that I have now, she used to try to tell me over and over and over again, and I heard her. She said, we have to let go of all of our old ideas. And that means, like, not just when we get here, but forever. I have to continue to let go of my old ideas. Like, what worked for me last year probably isn't going to work for me anymore if I'm growing. Like, my program is to constantly evolve. My relationships have to evolve. I found that this is a grow or go kind of a deal. Like, I have to keep moving onward and upward, or I'm moving backwards. That's just for me personally. Not for anybody else. So, I've been really uncomfortable. There's been a lot of change. Ultimately, I'm incredibly grateful. Just quickly, just to kind of, like, give a little bit of perspective, I started drinking when I was a child, and I got sober when I was a child. My father started going to AA meetings after I had already been sent to an institution when I was 14 years old, and then my father got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, and my drinking had escalated. I'd gone from, like, being a total, like, petrified, fear-based child of an alcoholic, to an alcoholic, to my father's drinking buddy, to my father got sober, and then he was trying to get me sober, and this all happened, like, really in rapid succession. And anyway, I didn't want to get sober because I didn't want to stop drinking, and I don't know. I was really, really angry, and I was really full of fear, and I didn't know it. Because I always had a smile on my face, and I always kept a good attitude, and I always just wanted everyone to like me, and I just wanted everyone to get along. But this is the thing, like, I'm like the kind of alcoholic that, like, when I start drinking, I have a massive personality change. So, like, who I am at the core of my being, like, completely disappears, and I become a totally different person. And that caused me so much emotional pain that I couldn't really keep drinking. Like, without, basically, it caused me to be very suicidal. So I was like, I was sober. When I was sober, I was suicidal. And then when I was drinking, I wasn't. So,
I look like you.
Mommy!
It's like we have a guest. Hi, iPhone T. You might want to mute your phone. But anyways, like I said, my dad got sober. He started inviting me to meetings, and in a gentle, loving way, and I started to come to meetings, and I didn't want to get sober, and then, but I kept coming back, because when I came to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, I felt like I was with people that I didn't feel crazy. Like, when I was with people in AA, I didn't feel like, I thought that maybe I was just an alcoholic and I wasn't crazy. And everywhere else, I felt like I was just batshit crazy and there was no hope for me. And when I came to AA, I felt like there was hope. Ultimately, I got sober. I got sober after being hauled off to a sober camp out. I was gone for 3 days. I was separated from alcohol for 3 days. When I got home from that sober camp out, I had 3 days of sobriety. And I had a head full of recovery. And I remember that they told me that I could go to 90 meetings in 90 days before I made a decision that would affect the rest of my life, and they would gladly refund my misery if it didn't work out. And I had 3 days of sobriety, which was completely shocking to me, and I thought, well, if I have three, maybe I can get four. So that night I went to a meeting. It was the Sunday night podium topic discussion meeting at the Palmdale group, which I had been to before. And I felt like, okay, like I'm just going to try this. Like I'm going to take this seriously for the first time. And that was July 7th, 19. That was actually July 10th, 7th, 8th, 9th. That would have been July 9th, 1989. And that would have been my third day of sobriety. So I just celebrated 32 years just a few weeks ago. I was 15 years old. So fast forward, a lot of life has happened in that time, and I've definitely practiced a mediocre program most of my sobriety. I haven't really done a very good job of being a good alcoholic and doing all the things in the correct order and at the right times. I did a lot of things backwards and a lot of things upside down. I got sober when I was 15, and by the time I was 16, I was married and pregnant. I married a guy who was 13 years my senior in this program, and I was married to that man for 19 years until I was 35 years old, which ultimately, for an alcoholic, crazy person who had a year of sobriety and who was basically a child, that really didn't help me propel my recovery forward. That probably set me back. So, but you know what? The program still works, and I did stay sober one day at a time, and my life did get better. And I did do the steps, and I did have sponsors, and I did go to meetings, and I did carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I did grow as an individual. I've had the opportunity to do service all over inside and all over AA and in different states in AA. And you know, I just want to say, like, when I had 6 years of sobriety was the first time that I was like, oh my goodness, I'm so thirsty. I think that a drink is a good idea. Because when I got here when I was 15, the obsession to drink was removed, but it came back. And I'm really grateful for the foundation that I got when I was new of going back to basics, because I needed that. And I'm grateful that I had at least one person on the planet that I could call and I could tell them that I was thirsty. Because if we can't pick up the phone and tell someone we want a drink when we're thirsty, because we think we're not supposed to want a drink because we're in AA and don't you know, we shouldn't want a drink anymore. We're really screwing ourselves. And the person I talked to was actually my sister-in-law, who was also sober in the program. And she told me when I was 6 years sober, and I think she had 5 years at the time, she said that I needed to think through the drink. And I did. And I really thought it through, and I figured out that I wasn't, what I wanted was to check the fuck out, and not participate in my life anymore. So drinking was probably a really bad idea. Yeah. Especially because at that point I already had 4 children. So, no, I didn't have 4 yet. I had 3 at that point. Soon after that, I kind of started my steps over. And, sorry, I'm so emotional. Anyway, it's kind of a miracle that I'm sober. When I think of all the shit, I'm like, how the hell? Anyway, I'll try to move fast because I could just talk and talk and talk because so much stuff has happened. But I've had, like, amazing people along the way. Like, every single time things start to get, like, really, like, squirrely, the right person just shows up. And all I've had to do is just continue to, like, get out of bed and go to a meeting and pick up the phone and try something new. All I've had to do is be a little bit honest, a little bit open, and a little bit willing. I actually haven't had to be, like, fully honest, fully open, and fully willing, because if I did, it would not have worked out, because I've not always been fully honest, because I'm ashamed, and I'm fear-based, right? I haven't always been open-minded because I think I have all the answers. And I haven't always been willing. But I've been enough to where I'm still here. And then I just didn't drink between meetings. Ultimately, so fast forward. Obviously, the children grew up. They're all between 24 and 30 years old now. I have 3 grandchildren. I also adopted one along the way, and I have a stepson. That man and I got divorced when I was 35 years old. And I went from that relationship to another relationship, and I married my first love, who I'd known since I was 14 years old. That is where the stepson came from. And him and I adopted a daughter. And we moved to Visalia in 2014, and I am madly in love with this place. It is my home. I didn't really think I'd ever find a home. I had a lot of home insecurity and sobriety because husband number one didn't really work consistently. And I have a life here, and I have people here, and I love Alcoholics Anonymous here. And it's taken a while for me to find, a community and to create a community, but it has happened. And it has happened as a result of service work, and it's happened as a result of showing up, and it's happened as a result of inviting people, and it's happened as a result of showing up to invitations. It's hard and really, really uncomfortable. I've had to continue to try to put myself out there, even though I can display some seriously antisocial behavior sometimes, which does not help that. The one thing I kind of really want to talk about has to do with, alcoholism manifests without alcohol, which is kind of like a lot of stuff about step 7, which is really my favorite step. This will probably be a little choppy. But I had something happen this year. The first Wednesday in January, my children came sat down. We always had dinner together. And they all came over for dinner, and they sat down. And after dinner, my daughter and my son were like, "We need to tell you something." And I was like, okay. Well, my adopted daughter had been gone at a hotel for 3 days, and I didn't know why. And they were going to let me know when my daughter had been gone at the hotel for 3 days. Well, she'd been gone for 3 days because my husband had hit on her. And So ultimately, the next day I filed for divorce. And what I've learned is that I have alcoholism, but I also grew up in alcoholism, and I'm also madly in love with alcoholics and drug addicts. I know I am because I hang out with them all the time. I think they're the coolest people in the world. They're very interesting and they're very exciting. I also know that as an alcoholic, I am prone to all a myriad of other addictions. It doesn't mean I practice all of them, but I am prone to them. I am prone to things like overeating, undereating, love addiction, sex addiction, gambling, work addiction. These are all things that I find very exciting, that I would like do if I could get away with all the time. Debting, spending, not eating, overeating, obsessing, addiction to people, like fixing people. This is all like really delicious stuff that like, it's not a secret that we all do it. Everyone in AA is prone to it. We all have more, like some people are really more into gambling than they are into like work addiction, right? Or some people are more into like food addiction than sex addiction, but pretty much it's everywhere. So the point of the matter is that I've got mine, right? I've got my shit, and they got their shit. And my job is to practice these steps in all areas of my life, over and over and over again. And my job is to find a higher power that can solve all of my problems. On page 75 in the 12 and 12, which I've read a zillion times because I read it with all my sponsees, because I love all the literature in Alcoholics Anonymous, not just the big book. It says, in every case, pain had been the price of admission into a new life. And, you know, the thing about all these addictions is they're all pain avoiders. So, like, any time I'm, like, practicing something to take me out of, like, any sort of feeling, I'm avoiding pain, which means I'm avoiding a new and wonderful experience. And, you know, I've just, like, this, my whole life kind of being, like, shattered at the beginning of this year has been, like, the most amazing thing. Because it's basically thrust me into an insane amount of pain that I cannot avoid. Like, there's literally nothing I can do to avoid the amount of pain right now. And I've been so thirsty. And it's been so wonderful. Because it has created all of this, like, rawness. And all this, like, I can't pretend like I got my shit together, because I definitely don't. And it has revealed all of my defects of character. Like, they're all just like, completely on blast. And I'm, like, in the middle of it right now, right? So you guys are, like, looking at someone who's, like, not the other side. Like, I usually want to share about this shit once I'm, like, to the other side. So I'm not to the other side. I'm just, like, really, really ugly right now. But what I can share about being in the middle of it and being open to it and not avoiding it is that what I've been doing to get through it is I have a sponsor. I have been two 12-step programs that I go to regularly, and I have two sponsors, one in AA and one in that other 12-step program, and I use them, and I'm doing the steps in that other 12-step program as well as the steps in the AA program, which I was already doing that before all this happened. Well, actually, I was doing it with one program but not the other one, so then I added the other one. I have a higher power, and I do know that there is a God, and I'm not it. Thank goodness I know that. Because I can't fix this shit, right? It's so bad, there's like no way I can do anything about it, even though I really, really want to. I have a program, I have a sponsor, and I have a higher power. And that is like my mantra. So my mantra was, in the past was always, there's a God and I'm not it. My new mantra this spring has been, I have a program, I have a sponsor, and I have a higher power, so I'm going to be okay. And I remind myself of that because I need all of those things. What I also need is to tell on myself constantly. So the amount of transparency that I've had to engage in lately is insane because I don't want anyone to know about all this stuff. It's embarrassing. But it's okay. Like, talking about it actually has taken all the power away. And now I'm just like, here I am. Like, here I am. And, So, what's interesting is the kind of pain that I'm in is constant and ongoing, and it's actually gotten worse, which is really interesting. So, like, January, February, and March, I was pretty, like, I kind of went into, like, I got this mode and, like, handling all the problems and being manic and being a workaholic, which I'm really good at. And then that quit working. And then I started to get angry. And that was embarrassing. That was not good because then people around me had to deal with that. And then I started to, like, get sad. And now I'm just, like, the last week I've been, like, walking around, like, trying to keep from crying pretty much all the time. But I'm still going through life and doing the things that I need to do. But I'm, like, incredibly emotional, which is awful because it makes me tired. So I'm really, really tired. I'm exhausted all the time. But the cool thing is that, like, it doesn't matter. It's okay for me to be in pain. Who cares? I would much rather be in pain and be in reality than to be where I was a year ago. And a year ago where I was I was married to a man that was using methamphetamine and I didn't know it. That's where I was, and I didn't know it. Like, fuck that. I don't want to live that way. Because I was, like, doing my thing, and everything was hunky-dory. And he obviously had a whole bunch of other problems, because ultimately he ended up acting out in a very inappropriate way with our daughter, right? So, and who was in the middle of that? Me, right? So, I don't want to live that way anymore. When there is something happening that makes me feel uncomfortable in my own skin, I want to feel that as opposed to ignore that and pretend like it's not happening. Because if I can feel that and I can connect with that, then I can do something different. And then I don't have to pass this insanity on to the next generation or to the people I come in contact with. And I can share truth with my sponsees. And this ugliness that I'm experiencing right now is so magically delicious for the people that I sponsor. They get to see me, like, be all messed up and stay sober one day at a time. So, like, I'm just really grateful. And everything is, like, exactly the way it should be. I went to Cabo San Lucas last week. I got back last Saturday, so a week ago Saturday I got back. I went for a week with my mom and my two brothers. And when I was in Cabo, which is, like, home away from home for me, I went to meetings. The Hacienda group of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is, like, my second home group. And those are my people. And I walked on the marina every morning. And I watched the sunrise every morning. And I didn't drink. And I picked up a sponsee. Her name is Angie. And Angie just got done with chemotherapy, and Angie's sponsor is dying of kidney failure. Her sponsor is in St. George, Utah. And Angie's going through a divorce. And Angie has 18 years of sobriety. And she has more sobriety than anyone else in Cabo San Lucas. So when I showed up, she got really excited. And that is what matters. What matters is that I go to Cabo San Lucas, and that means I go to Alcoholics Anonymous in Cabo San Lucas. And that means that I make friends in that town because those are my people. And then maybe I can help another person. And her and I bonded immediately. And it means that, like, no matter what's going on, I meet with my sponsee on Sunday morning at 9 a.m. and I meet with my sponsee on Friday morning at 7 a.m. And then I've got the one that never shows up to the Tuesday 8 a.m. meeting. But I always forgive that person because I don't really care. It's not about me. And I think that next year I'll have a different story. Because last year I had a different story. And it's really exciting. Because this too shall pass, no matter what is happening. No matter how high I am on the mountaintop or how low I am, this too shall pass. So, that's all I have. Thank you for asking me to share, Bill.
Thank you so much, Sandra. Really appreciate you being willing to come here and be so vulnerable with us tonight. We are now starting the discussion part of the meeting. We'd like to hear from as many different people as possible. And with that, I'll turn over the meeting back to Sandra, and she can pick on people to share.
Really? I really think that Mike needs to join with his phone so he can share. Just saying. And I don't know who iPhone T is, but I think iPhone T might need to share. Or not. Okay, we'll come back to iPhone T. If iPhone T decides to share, then that would be awesome. And Mike, maybe you can join with your cell phone. Kathy, can we hear from you?
Hi, I'm Kathy. I'm an alcoholic, and I'm glad to meet you, Sandra. Thank you so much for being vulnerable and sharing your pain with us. You gave me peace, you know. There was just this, next week I'm supposed to talk, share. And I thought, wow, I just don't think I could do it with a few people like that. It's so scary. And then I couldn't do it with a lot of people. And just watching, I know. Can't win. It's no win. But your transparency just is beautiful. I love that. You know, because what you said, one of the things you said that really is so true is, I drink a lot longer, unfortunately, and fortunate. It is what it is, you know, that I can, you know, I've gotten thirsty in the 3 years. I'm doing really well right now. I happen to be going through the good moment, but I have suffered terrible depression in sobriety. And it was suicidal in drinking. So I really relate to that. I even had a suicidal time when my first year, I thought about running into a tree. Because I just didn't know how to deal with feelings and life and everything without drowning it in something. So what you said is so true. It's like, well, I'd rather go through the pain sober and make the change and stay in it. Because that's what it was for me. You know, I stayed in that darkness. And then in sobriety, I've come out of it and gone through the good stuff and then got back down in that hallway or that dark room, you know, and I come back out of it again. There's change. There's hope in this program. You know, there's no hope with it. For me, there was no hope. And, I mean, you could work the program. It says work the program, right? Well, that means getting the meetings, getting on meetings and sharing your heart. There's my working the steps, having a sponsor, having a finding in a higher power that works for me. I'm right now just really into reading some real spiritual books, a little deeper type books that I don't really need to get into. But, yeah, I work two programs as well because I'm a great codependent. You know, I came from an alcoholic family, so I have both, the double winner, what they call it. I probably could be addicted to anything else as well. I found that in sobriety. I love chocolate, you know, not just a few pieces, but a whole bag. I didn't have that when I was drinking because I used my alcohol. I didn't need to, but now I find myself going, wow, what happened to that bag of chocolate? What's really going on, Kathy? What's really going on? And so that deeper spiritual look is that's the beautiful thing about this program. That's what it's all about, is change. Change me. And wow, don't get that drinking. So thank you, Sandra. I guess I'm chatting on a little bit because I know there's only a few of us, so I took the stage on. So thanks for sharing. Thanks,
Kathy. Mike.
Hi, I'm Mike Alcoholic. Hi, everybody. Hi, Sandra. It's good seeing you. Haven't seen you in a long time. Missed you. I missed a lot of people. I only go to one live meeting anymore, and it's on Sunday mornings. The rest of them are Zoom noon meetings, usually. And that's what helps me. I'm having a hard time driving these days. You know, I was 33 when I got sober, and I'm 69 now, and not as young as I used to be, you know. And the thing is I'm just grateful to be sober, grateful to be able to go to meetings. I see Kathy at the noon meetings. I see Bill at the noon meetings, and it's grateful to see people. You know, I look forward to it every day, and I look forward to the Sunday night meeting. I still have my website. You know, I record Wednesday night and Sunday nights now. I don't go out of town like I used to. I used to go up to Springville and record, but I can't get a ride up there, and I can't drive that far anymore. And that's just the way. I just have to accept it. You know, acceptance just means that I have to just be spiritually okay with it. Doesn't mean I have to like it, you know. But I'm just so grateful to be here, still be here. I'm grateful to still be alive. And it's just grateful to be able to do this, you know, do this stuff online. And I'm glad that I was able to. Get my laptop going fast enough. You can probably hear my other speaker in the background, but that's the best I can do. Thank you for sharing. I really appreciate your sharing. And you talked about being in fear of things, and there's a lot of things I'm fearful of these days. Mostly it's my health. But I'm just doing the best I can. You know, hanging in there, you know, and just grateful when I see people from my past like you, Sandra, and just grateful to be here. That's all I can say, and grateful to be sober, and it's great to see you. Okay, so take care.
Thank you, Mike. Thanks for pulling out the laptop. Okay, well, iPhone T, if you want to share, we would love that. But if not, we're going to have to listen to Bill. He's our only choice. Okay, well, Bill, it's your turn. Oh, there's iPhone T. I see a video. I can't hear you. I see you, but I can't hear you.
Okay. Hi, can you hear me?
Oh, yes, I can hear you. What's your name?
Hi, I'm Tiffany.
Tiffany, welcome.
Hi. I really wasn't planning on sharing, but hi, everyone.
Hi.
I am here for my DUI class. I'm really barely starting to try to be sober. I probably, it's only been probably like about a week that I stopped using any type of alcohol or drugs. So I'm kind of at the place where I'm trying to deal with my issues sober. I don't want to have to rely on any type of substance to deal with my problems. So I guess these are the first steps that I need to take in order to do that. And, yeah. I don't know what else to say.
That's okay. Thank you for sharing, Tiffany, and welcome.
Thanks.
I'll put my phone number in the chat, and so if you want a phone number to have somebody to call and want to go to a meeting together or anything, you can, okay? You can call
me. Okay, thank you.
You bet, Tiffany. Nice to meet you, and welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous.
No, I'll put my number in there too, Tiffany. I'm Kathy.
Okay, thank you, guys.
Yeah, and probably the best thing that you did tonight, Tiffany, was spare all of us from a few seconds of me.
I usually just listen, but, you know, I figured there's only a few people in here, so I might as well just say something.
Right on. That's a great way to get started. Good stuff. Well, thanks to all of you for being here tonight. I would have looked less sane than I even am, just sitting here in my office talking to myself. So I'm glad that you guys are here. And I'm always touched by the intense vulnerability that people in AA tend to bring, right? And so. You said something tonight, Sandra, that really resonated with me about this idea that, you know, we might get sober, we might kick our alcoholism, but there's something that many of us have. I won't say all because I don't know everything, but it seems to me a lot of us have a propensity for self-defeating or destructive behavior in one form, shape, or another. And some of those behaviors are, it talks about this in the 12 and 12, in the fourth step essay. It talks about how we have these God-given instincts for things like social interaction, for things like sex, and for food and shelter. And without those things, we would perish. And so those instincts are surely God-given, and they're good for us. The difficulty is that we get them out of their proper proportion. And so something I'm struggling with is a family issue as well. And the crazy thing is that, up until yesterday, very recently, I would have told you with no concern in my mind, no second thought that I just happened to be maybe you know a friend of mine talks about life, and he talks about it like, you know, you're usually either going into a storm, you're in the middle of a storm, or you're coming out of a storm, right? And that part of coming out of a storm feels especially peaceful because, you know, you've just gone through the storm, and there's no more storminess, right? And so it feels remarkably peaceful. And that's how I've been feeling. Is like remarkably peaceful. And I don't know if you guys can relate to this, but I have a way of creating storms for myself, you know, just and so like one little storm that I've been kicking around with is at work. I'm working for a very small company right now, and it's surprisingly not as chaotic of a work environment as I've been accustomed to. For 30 years, longer than that, I'm sure, but for as long as I can remember, I've worked in an environment where whether it really existed is a whole other story, right? But my perspective, my perception of my work environment was that I was constantly in a stage of some sort of threat, right? Meaning that I had to always be on the lookout for what it is that I need to do better. I can never really sort of take a breath and relax. For several years in a row, I was in a position where I was the company's top performer. And you know, the crazy thing is at the end of December, probably like the last couple weeks of December, when you're way above quota, you've sold more than the company's ever sold, you know, that kind of stuff. Man, life is good and easy. And January 1st, guess what? You're back at zero. And you gotta get back on that hamster wheel and produce again. And so I don't know, part of it is probably some of that addictive nature, but just creating this, this continuous sense of chaos in the work life. And so now I'm working for this small company. I haven't been there quite a year yet, and there's just not a lot of chaos. And so I start to wonder, well, is this really, you know, maybe how God wants me to live without so much chaos, or am I, you know, getting ready to get fired because I'm not dealing with enough chaos? I mean, you know, so those kinds of things happen. And then the other thing, and this is a recurring theme. If you've known me for any amount of time, you probably know that I talk a lot about the relationship with my father and how I was really, really angry with my father. I was really, I mean, angry is not the right word, like full of rage with my father. When I was first trying to get sober, and I've had the tremendous blessing of some people in my life who've had similar experiences, and they've shown me how to get out from underneath that rage, and they've taught me how to systematically take actions that allow me to live as the kind of person that I want to be. I suspect I'll always fall some measure short of my ideals, right? I'm never going to be fully capable of being, you know, all the things that I think I ought to be and not be any of the things that I think I ought not to be. For some reason, my dad is like my kryptonite, you know. Last year he was caught. He got caught up in the big fire that took place nearby here, and he lost his house. And so he came and stayed with us. And you know, really, I celebrated the fact that you know, I was able to actually welcome my dad and to live in my house for a period of time, and it felt good to be, you know, contributing, to be the kind of son that I would want to have, kind of thing, you know, Dad recently moved back up to the hills. He's got a RV trailer kind of thing where he's staying in while his house is being rebuilt. And several years ago, he had a couple of strokes, and so he has difficulty reading and writing and speaking. And so I struggle with this this situation where, you know, my dad wants to rebuild this house. And I don't know what it takes to rebuild a house, but I think it takes a lot of capabilities, a lot of attention, a lot of time and energy that really I don't have. And I fear that my dad doesn't have what it takes either. But he's doing it. And so he shows up at my house and he makes these statements about that his contractor's not replying to any of his notes, and I don't know if this is what he's saying, but I'll tell you what I'm hearing. What I'm hearing is, Bill, I need you to solve my problems for me. That's what I hear. And it agitates me because my dad doesn't do any of the, well, any, that's a word I shouldn't use. He doesn't do many of the things that I think a person who is in his position ought to be doing if he's going to endeavor to take on such a project. And I feel burdened. I guess kind of talking about that a little bit here tonight, I'm coming to some realization that my dad may not be actually asking me to do some of the things that I'm jumping in and doing because I think he's asking me to do them. And my wife said something to me today that was kind of interesting. She said, you know, maybe God has you in this job that's not so chaotic right now so that you have a little more time to deal with some of these kinds of things. And that's kind of got me second guessing, you know, why it is I just fly off the handle when I feel like my dad is not doing things I think he ought to be doing, and how I perceive that puts burdens on me. And okay, so probably an important thing to bring this back to is how does this have anything to do with alcoholism? And I suppose, when I think about the years I was drinking, I was behaving, I was behaving in most cases, much in the ways I'm criticizing my dad for behaving, right? So I was never responsible for the predicaments that I got myself into. I always expected other people to dig me out of the trouble I was in. So I'm reminded, I'm sort of confronted with my old self in facing my dad's situation. And you know, it's one thing you guys have taught me through the process of the steps, specifically the inventory steps, is that there are few things in life that will piss me off more than me seeing things about myself that I don't like in you, right? So, like, this first came to my attention when my sponsor had me start the sixth step and talking about character defects, and he gave me a list of like 150 of them, right? And they were organized alphabetically, and one of the first ones I saw was arrogant, and I thought, oh yeah, I hate those arrogant people. And as we kind of walked through that work, what I came to understand was that the reason I am so agitated at arrogant people is because I don't think the rules apply to me, and I don't think I should have to do the work, and I should get all the glory, right? So I'm arrogant. That's the bottom line. And so in some ways, I kind of feel like, these things that I'm going to call shortcomings that my dad's demonstrating are things that somehow I'm supposed to fix in him. I can't even, by myself, I can't even fix those things in me. I'd have to be insane to think that I'm going to change my dad. So I've got a little work to do, because I know that I know from experience, time and time and time again, when I'm upset, here's a wonderful old saying we get from our friends at Al-Anon. They say, if the problem isn't me, there isn't a solution. So if I'm all wrapped around the axle about what I think my dad is doing or should be doing or isn't doing, then I probably need to take a look at how I'm responding to that situation. And the reason that's so important to me is that I can work myself into a state of discomfort where I may absolutely positively need to make myself feel better using some kind of substance. And that's a price I'm just not willing to pay today. So I'd rather, and I guess this kind of aligns back with some things you were saying too, Sandra. You know, I'd rather go through the pain with the knowledge that I'm going to come out of it a stronger person than to live blissfully in ignorance of the conditions that are keeping me in a state of disease today. So anyway, quite a lot out of me. I thank you all for your attendance tonight and for participating. Sandra, thank you so much for coming and sharing with our group. I'm going to go ahead and make some closing announcements here. The Valley Group encourages sponsorship and service to our fellowship. We invite you to come early and stay after the meeting to get better acquainted with our fellowship. If you're interested in being of service to this group, please reach out to me after the meeting. If anyone is in need of sponsorship or is available to be a sponsor, please send me a direct message via the chat with your name and phone number, and I'll be sure to get that information to our sponsor coordinator. Are there any AA announcements from the audience here?
I'm Mike Alcoholic. I just wanted to remind people that noon every day on Zoom, there's a Valley Group Zoom meeting, and you can find the link on the Tulare County Office of Central Office's website. I just wanted to share that. They're great meetings. The noon meetings are great meetings.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you. Yeah, we encourage you to check the Tulare County Central Office website and the meeting guide application for the latest updates on meeting times and locations. The Valley Group holds business meetings at 6 p.m. on the last Wednesday of each month. Our Sunday evening, which is this coming Wednesday, by the way, our Sunday evening group holds business meetings right after the conclusion of the meeting on the last Sunday of each month at 9 p.m. Holy cow, that's today. Okay. If you consider yourself a member of this group, we invite you to serve our group with your participation. These two are being held online. We have a growing library of recordings of AA members sharing their experience, strength, and hope available at www.recovere.net. That's recovery.net, spelled phonetically. That you can access for free at any time. We encourage you to check them out. We open our online meeting space 15 minutes early, and we'll keep it open to allow you an opportunity to socialize, check the chat panel, and to get better acquainted. And I will be putting the details for attendance verification up in the chat in just a moment. And with that, I will...